Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading this morning from Canto 1, Chapter 12, text number 3. Tad idam shrotamichchamo gaditum yadi manyase bruhina shraddhadhananam yasya gyanam adachchutkaha. Tat all idam this, shrotum, to hear, ichchamaha, all willing, yaditum, to narrate, yadi, if, manyase, you think, bruhi, please speak, naha, we, Shraddhananam, who are very much respectful. Yasya, whose? Jnanam, transcendental knowledge. Adat, delivered. Shukaha, Sri Shukadeva Goswami. Translation, we all respectfully want to hear about him, Maharaj Parikshit, to whom Shukadeva Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge. Please, speak on this matter. So this is the sages of Naimisharanya speaking to Sutta, requesting more. Purport. Shukadeva Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge to Maharaj Parikshit during the remaining 7 days of his life. And Maharaj Parikshit heard him properly, just like an ardent student. The effect of such bona fide hearing and chanting of Srimad Bhagavatam was equally shared by both the hearer and the chanter. Both of them were benefited. Out of the 9 different transcendental means of devotional service to the Lord prescribed in the Bhagavatam, either all of them, or some of them, or even one of them, are equally beneficial if properly discharged. Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadeva Goswami were serious performers of the first 2 important items, namely the process of chanting and the process of hearing, and therefore both of them were successful in their laudable attempt. Transcendental realization is attained by such serious hearing and chanting and not otherwise. There is a type of spiritual master, Prabhupada's got his boxing gloves on here, and disciple, much advertised in this age of Kali. It is said that the master injects spiritual force into the disciple by an electric current generated by the master, and the disciple begins to feel the shock. He becomes unconscious, and the master weeps for his exhausting his store of so-called spiritual assets. Such bogus advertisement is going on in this age, and the poor common man is becoming the victim of such advertisement. We do not find such folk tales in the dealings of Shukadeva Goswami and his great disciple Maharaj Parikshit. The sage recited Srimad Bhagavatam in devotion And the great king heard him properly. The king did not feel any shock of electric current from the master, nor did he become unconscious while receiving knowledge from the master. One should not, therefore, become a victim of these unauthorized advertisements made by some bogus representative of Vedic knowledge. Now, he's back to normal again. The sages of Naimisharanya were very respectful in hearing about Maharaj Parikshit because of his receiving knowledge from Shukadeva Goswami by means of ardent hearing. Ardent hearing from the bona fide master is the only way to receive transcendental knowledge. And gloves are back on again. No need for medical performances or occult mysticism for miraculous events. Back to the process is simple, but only the sincere party can achieve the desired result. I chose as a topic for this morning these two, this is one of the two, ardent hearing and humility, and how they are not only, they're helpful, they're essential in being the recipient of the full benefit or the deliverer of the full benefit or being involved in the process of reaching Krishna through transcendental sound vibration. I thought I would start with this word ardent that Prabhupada has used three times in the purport and spend a little bit of time with just that adjective, ardent. Like our great acharyas do, Prabhupada was very particular about language, although English wasn't his first language, and he acknowledged it wasn't his first language. He had quite a command of English language. Bhaktisiddhanta, what to speak? Bhaktisiddhanta, his language was so precise. So precise that we're not used to using words that he used because they were too precise. We speak in the vernacular all the time. I mean, listen to some, a little commentary here. Listen to people's conversation. And there are idioms and vernacular and things that you hear the, listen to the words that are being spoken. It's distracting. It's not on point. Like, and then he said, like, you know what I mean. So, Bhaktisiddhanta was very economical and precise, and he knew what he wanted to say, and he said it. It was just, again, some appreciation. I'm still reverberating from that thinking, meditating on what he did. I mean, what capacity of control of the mind must he have had? How powerful was his mind? Three times 64 rounds a day for 9 years? For 9 years? Every day without fail? How strong was his mind? I mean, how transcendental? Like. So when he spoke, he knew what he wanted to say, and he knew the words he wanted to use to say. And Srila Prabhupada heard from him, just again some appreciation. Prabhupada said, I would sit and listen, and my brain was puzzled. And he was speaking in Bengali, and Prabhupada was, it was their first language. So, acharyas don't mistake in the words that they use. So this word ardent has a purpose. So I looked it up in the dictionary. Here's some dictionary meanings. Wholeheartedness. Intense. Highly enthusiastic. Ardent. You know, the example that they give is a baseball fan. You know, that's ardentness in this world. Or it's, you know, a sports fan, or I don't want to go too far afield. In New York, we've taken part in the India Independence Day parade, and the organizers, they know how to get a crowd. They invite some Bollywood stars. I won't go into it. They draw a crowd. They have ardent followers. Oh, my experience is being in the park at the end of the parade, like to make sure that the book table and the prasadam and all that is ready. And then when the review stand, when the Bollywood people pass on the float by the review stand, you hear this. That means, you know, they're coming down because they're like in the middle because they're like the important people. It has nothing to do with Indian independence. It has only to do with getting people to come to the event. And then they get off their float and they go to the stage, and everybody leaves the books and the prasadam, and they just go run to the stage to see the Bollywood folks. And when they get off the stage, the event's over. So, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, everyone's worshipping someone, and if they don't want to worship Krishna, they're going to worship someone. And there's, according to the modes of nature, one will worship. So this is, anyway, ardent. A comparable word used by Rupa Goswami in his A Nectar of Instruction or Upadesha Amrita is utsahan, enthusiasm. And according to Rupa Goswami, it's number one on the list of items that are will enhance bhakti. Here in the purport, without which it's going to be very slow. Maybe too slow. But very slow. And one will feel, oh, how come it's so slow? This is an operative principle, the utsahan, or ardentness, the wholeheartedness or intensity or the highly enthusiastic way in which we take up devotional service. And something I very much like in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary is a very simple point. Without a spiritual conception of who we are and the process of bhakti and the goal, enthusiasm isn't going to sustain. In other words, passion is the other kind. You know, the worshiper of the Bollywood star or the baseball or whatever it is, a politician or, you know, something worldly. Or, you know, go in the lower direction and, you know, all these movies with, you know, vampires and witches and all that stuff. It's like, you know, really, there's the mode of ignorance has its bhav also. Tamagun bhav. And, you know, they flock and they dress themselves and they, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Worshippers of hobgoblins and ghosts and vampires and witches and witchcraft. And it has its own subculture in America. And not only in America, you know, it's the mode of nature is all over the world. So, this is, with a spiritual conception, then it's sustainable. It doesn't come and go. Enthusiasm doesn't come and go when it's on the spiritual platform. And that's exactly what we heard from Bhaktisiddhanta yesterday. But I'll just go through some other examples of how Prabhupada uses this word ardent. I did a little word search. And Prabhupada describes the intensity of Arjuna in his studying under Dronacharya. He was an ardent student of Dronacharya, so much so that he didn't even sleep. He was practicing his archery in the night, and then in the morning, and in the day, and in the evening, and at night. And when Drona saw that, something happened. I mean, besides what Arjuna was doing, something happened from the teacher's side, and he decided, I'm going to make him the best. It's important, because in devotional service, what is it? It's not our effort. I mean, we have to make effort. The wonderful Leela of Mother Jasoda trying to bind Krishna, and she's making effort. Prayasa. The word advice, gyane prayasa udapashina manta eva. Don't, you know, abandoning efforts of speculative knowledge, but even in trying to do something in devotion. Mother Jasoda was trying to do something in devotion. But Krishna had a different idea. He wanted to go back to the storeroom and take some more butter and yogurt and feed it to the monkeys and, you know, have fun. Mother Jasoda wanted to bind him. So according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, this is, anyway, his explanation is that Krishna exhibited two potencies that made it impossible for Mother Jasoda to be successful in binding Krishna. His Sva Shakti, who can stop Krishna's own potency. And Icha Shakti, he wanted to go in somewhere else, so she wasn't able to do it. But she didn't stop. She became fatigued. She began to perspire. She tried all means, and the other gopis were watching, according to the description in the Bhagavatam, and they were laughing. And the commentary says, Mother Jasoda, don't you get it? It's not meant to happen. Just this morning you tied this little string around Krishna's waist and that little bell, and, you know, and now it's not happening. You got all this rope. It's not going around his waist. And she was laughing. Mother Jasoda was laughing, and they were laughing, the commentary says. And Mother Jasoda was saying, it's very amazing. No matter how much rope I have, his waist is like that of a fist. And I have, I think it was 150 feet of rope, and it's not going around his waist. Very amazing. And the second is, it's always two fingers too short. Not three or four, but it's always two. I get more rope and it's still two. I get more rope and it's still two. It's most amazing, and she was laughing. And the gopis were laughing. But she didn't stop. She continued her effort. The effort is needed. But when Krishna sees, it's immediately connected with this message of ardent. When Krishna sees, just like when Drona saw, wow, how determined is Arjuna. I'm going to make him the best student. And he committed that. I will make you the best. Which later caused another, like, concern when apparently Ekalavya knew something that Arjuna didn't know how to do. It's a little side note. We'll get back to the ardent. But he was ardent, Ekalavya. Ekalavya was, for those of you who are not familiar, Ekalavya was a forest dweller, the son of the king of the forest dwellers. So he was like the prince forest dweller. And Ekalavya had an attitude. He wanted to become better than Arjuna. Competitive spirit. Not transcendental, the other kind. Like, I'm going to be better than you kind of spirit. So he approached Drona and asked Drona to accept him as a student, and he said no. So he went to the forest and made a statue or a murti of forest elements and worshipped that statue, and he was an ardent practitioner of skills too. And he became very skilled. He was day and night also ardent. And when Arjuna and the Pandavas saw a skill, a dog that had 7 arrows pierced through his mouth so he couldn't even bark. Wow. Besides, that's vicious. Arjuna went back to Drona and said, I thought you said I would be the best student. I don't know how to do this one. And Drona said, well, what do you mean, this one? He explained, and Ekalavya did it. What? Let's go find Ekalavya. And he then asked Ekalavya, you're my student? Then I have the right to ask for Guru Dakshin? Yes? Oh, yes. Whatever you want. I'd like your right thumb, please. Without hesitation, he cut off his right thumb and gave it to Drona. So thank you very much. See you later. Because without the thumb, he can't do the archery program. In that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary about that, he did an episode, not a full verse-by-verse commentary on the Mahabharata and in these portions. And his commentary says, many people think, oh, what a wonderful disciple. He was so surrendered to his spiritual master that when he was asked to give his thumb, he gave his thumb. What a wonderful person. Bhaktisiddhanta said, that's a wrong understanding. Because had he been so submissive to his spiritual master, he wouldn't have done what he did in the first place. He wasn't submissive. He was competitive against Arjuna. And after all that happened, I'm still searching for the details. It's apparently in one part of the Mahabharata, because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur references it in his Harmonist article, that Krishna ended up killing Ekalavya, the details of which I'm still trying to find. So, Arjuna was an ardent student of Drona. When Drona saw that, so it wasn't just he practiced a lot, he was submissive to Drona. Ekalavya was an ardent practitioner who wasn't, although it apparently he was. It was cosmetically one thing and inside something else. He was rotten inside, as far as motive is concerned. So we have to be little cautious about what motives are. However, like Dhruva, his motive wasn't so good. His was a get back mentality. I'm going to get back at my mother, my stepmother, Suruchi. I'm going to not only get my father's kingdom better than my father's 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 kingdom, because I'm going to get Vishnu's blessing, which he obtained through the mercy of Narada. But his submission went genuinely to Vishnu, and with submission and great feelings of gratitude to Narada, he overcame that misdirected motivation. He became unmotivated for material gain or profit motivation as he progressed by the mercy of Narada Muni, because of his submission to Narada Muni, genuine submission. and Narada gave his mercy. No small thing. There's another place in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada uses this word ardent a few times. And for those of you that got your little pads, your notebook pads or whatever you call them, tablets, you call those things. Canto 3, Chapter 14, Text 41. This is a description of Kasyapa speaking to Diti. And it's after her pregnancy before the birth of the twin demons that will appear. And Kasyapa speaks very bluntly about the inauspiciousness of the circumstance and the motivation for Diti's pregnancy. And commensurately, there will be an inauspicious result from inauspicious motivation and circumstances. And as a result, you'll give birth to two sons, twins, who will kill poor, faultless living entities. They'll torture women, and they will enrage great souls. So there you go, Diti. There's the consequences of all of this. And then the Supreme Lord will descend and annihilate them. So in the purport, Prabhupada uses this word ardent in the following way. He says, the Supreme Lord descends only to give relief to his ardent devotees. So ardent devotees are those devotees who, even when there's obstacle, even when there's harassment and torture and torment and adversity, they carry on because they're not going to budge an inch from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord in serving him. And it's very much like what Bhaktisiddhanta wrote, we read it, that the position of humility, because that's the other part of what we're going to speak about, is, well, one is completely fixed upon truth with a capital T, and one will not take shelter of any untruth, no matter what the circumstance. So it may be whatever it may be, circumstance, but one will not depart from the truth. And understanding that ultimately the protection of the Supreme Lord is there, although it may not be the way that we would design protection, protection is there. Transcendental protection is there. Maybe some difficulty will come on the material plane, but transcendental protection will be there. One is assured. That's one of the symptoms, according to Padma Purana, the symptoms of surrender. Lord is my protector. Rakshikshatiti Vishvaso. He's my protector and I don't have any other protector. Krishna is my protector. So that takes, that's a symptom of the ardent devotee. Now this is specifically now ardent hearing. So great eagerness. Shukadeva Goswami is speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, who is also an ardent hearer. He has a good reason. He knows he's going to die in 7 days. Or thinking about Ajamila. Boy, was he ardent. He's sitting there hearing this Bhagavatam class between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. And the outcome of which is going to be where he's going, the good place or the bad place. He was an ardent hearer of that message. And because he was an ardent hearer, all of his misgivings, all of his contaminations were taken away completely. The potency is there for that in these sound vibrations, as we were discussing yesterday evening, the spiritual sound or the Vishuddha Sattva nature of Krishna and Krishna Katha, it's Nijasarva Shaktis. As the holy name has all transcendental potencies, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam also has all transcendental potencies. So the variable is not in the sound vibration, the variable is what's in our heart. And, you know, the eagerness with which we're approaching that sound vibration. So now we'll go to the motivated. The motivated is, well, I don't like suffering. And so I'm going to listen really carefully. And then what happens when the suffering subsides? See you later, Krishna. Thanks a lot. Like a fair weather friend. You know that phrase, fair weather friend. When I have a need, you're my friend, and the need is over. See you later. Not like that. Neither for achieving something, jnana karma dhyanavratam, neither for achieving something temporary, nor even for achieving liberation. Then what? Just being in one's relationship with the Supreme Lord. Striving, even in our stage, striving for regaining our forgotten loving relationship with Krishna. And we're not there, but we know that that's the message of our acharyas, the message of Lord Chaitanya, the gift of Lord Chaitanya, and the eagerness with which, the ardentness, the utsahan, enthusiasm with which we take up the process of hearing and chanting is going to determine, as Prabhupada is writing here in the purport, that the receiving of transcendental knowledge and not otherwise. Then another similar word is tivra. We have these, you know, ardent, utsahan, and then tivra, which has a very, the exact meaning is different, but the force of it is the same. When, in fact, Prabhupada, that famous verse, very important verse, from the Bhagavatam, second canto, akama, sarvakamo va mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. The indication is that one should, regardless of one's motivation, I want liberation, or I want all material things, or I don't want either of them, whatever one's position, tivra bhakti, devotional service should be engaged in the synonyms, Prabhupada writes, with great force. And in the verse, it's by all means. Like priority number one, and anything else connects to that priority number one, and just engage it for that one thing. What's that? Powerful. Great determination. Unflinching determination. It's compared in several places in Prabhupada's writings to the rays of the sun that are unmixed. If those of you that are familiar with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's description of anartas and the anarta nivritti process, anartas are like clouds in the sky when the rays of the sun are blocked by the clouds of the sky. And so the full force of the unmixed rays of the sun, the tivra rays of the sun, are not experienced. Instead, they're blocked. One of the words is obfuscated. They're in between us and Krishna. There's some filter. So we don't get the fullness of Krishna's mercy. But when from our side, just like Arjuna and his ardent following of the teachings of Drona, Drona moved. The mercy of Drona came, just like Mother Jasoda trying to bind Krishna. When she was unable to, but Krishna saw the ardent desire out of love to bind Krishna, he withdrew those two potencies that were stopping her and instead he exhibited his mercy, Kripa Shakti. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. In fact, it specifically says, because his Kripa Shakti overwhelmed those other potencies, they were withdrawn. When Krishna shows his mercy, it's that's topmost. It surpasses and overcomes anything else. If you get Krishna's mercy, you're in the spiritual world. And Krishna is merciful. When we hear Krishna Katha, Krishna is there and Krishna's mercy is there. So again, the operative principle is what's going on our side. The eagerness, the degree of eagerness. And then again, that degree of eagerness depends upon having a spiritual conception. Exactly as Bhakti Siddhanta, with that question someone asked, what's the, according to Mahaprabhu, what's the primary duty of life? And he begins by saying, well, the first thing is you have to have a spiritual conception. Because otherwise, it's the error in a mathematical calculation at the very beginning. And every other calculation may be nice, but you're going to get the wrong answer. You have to go back to the beginning and have a spiritual conception. And how do you get a spiritual conception? That depends on mercy too. Completely. And the speculative process, they don't bother with the proper conception. They're just going on their own rah-rah, sis-boom-ba, I've got a big intellect, I'll figure it out program. That's not, it's a failure before you even get started. Mogasha moga karma no moga jnana vichita saha. One's defeated before you even get going. You'll end up somewhere lost. Like listening to a GPS that keeps trying to tell you to go the wrong way. You had that experience? Do a U-turn. Anyway. And then the other part, humility. So, humility, similarly, humility isn't the material kind, the turn the other cheek kind. Someone slaps you here, turn, let them slap you over there. Not that kind of humility. Humility is dependent upon a spiritual conception. Humility means not just aham brahmasmi, I'm spirit soul, but in comparison to Krishna, very tiny. I'm fully dependent upon the fully independent. Before Krishna, I'm insignificant. Yet, in Rupa Goswami's language, not only I'm tiny, I've misused my free will, turned my back on Krishna and said, see you later, and I've been, through millions of lifetimes, and shamelessly I'm coming back and saying, please accept me. Humility. With a spiritual conception. Depending fully upon humility invites enthusiasm. It's really nice. Like, enthusiasm for what? Enthusiasm for Krishna's mercy. Because I need Krishna's mercy. Boy, do we need Krishna's mercy. And who's going to think like that without having a spiritual conception of humility? The answer is they're not. It's going to be of their own strength. And we do this again and again and again and again. We get a nice idea and get real enthusiastic and we run off and forget the spiritual conception required to go and do it. You know what I'm speaking about? One of the questions, the top 10 questions in the Swami circuit. Why is it that we, our enthusiasm fizzles. We get this inspiration and zoom, zoom, off we go, and then it disappears. What happened? Because we forget the position of humility, the person from whom we receive the message itself and the source of all of that, Krishna, we go off in the doership mode. And the enthusiasm dissipates. False ego chops us to pieces. Because it wasn't based on a spiritual conception that we stayed with. And the sense of gratitude that comes from one who knows with spiritual humility, I'm dependent. And but if you stay with that position in the enthusiastic feeling oneself insignificant, dependent position, spiritual strength continues and it doesn't dissipate. So the problem is not over there, the problem is over here. And that's where ardent hearing comes in. It can cleanse all of that. The potency is there simply if we hear in the right manner, with the right regard. As the verse also says, Shraddha nanam. They have great respect. Shraddha means literally faith, but it's translated very much respectful. That's in the word for word. And it begins in the verse. We all respectfully. So it's like you're looking up with respect for the message and the person delivering the message and the subject matter. And stay in that position. That's our position. It's a nice position. It's exhibited by our great acharyas. Even they're in the stage of perfection. They have that high regard for Vaishnavas who are qualified. Even they're fully qualified. They're teaching, it's not like a show. It's their mood. And they're teaching us by their example. Then we can have this, the full effect intended from the process of hearing and chanting and remembering. Hare Krishna. So any discussion? You have a hand over here. Put your hand up again.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, I was wondering if you can speak a little bit more about the mood with which we should engage in the process of hearing.
That's what I've been doing, I thought.
Well, I mean, like, from the perspective, you've mentioned an example like Ajamila, and Parikshit Maharaj had obviously a very clear and present reason to...
Well, that was circumstantial. So we can just wait till we know we're going to die and then get serious. But we don't know when. It could be in a moment. So it's the first class intelligent, you know this one, first class intelligent, just by hearing, one can understand. Second class intelligent is one hears, one doesn't understand, but one sees in others hardship and difficulty and suffering, and then one can understand. And then third class is one hears, doesn't understand, one sees in others, one doesn't understand, one suffers, and then one understands. And the fourth class is all those things happen, one still doesn't understand. So, depending upon the grade of intelligence, you know, recommended is just hear and understand. You know, go down the menu. See which one fits. Or, you know, but strive, because that's what we're gathered here together for, is both quantitative and qualitative hearing and discussing these subject matters so that our consciousness is cleansed and lifted and so on. As Jai Jagannath was pointing out yesterday, quantitative as well as qualitative. It's like, you know, you take a coal and a coal and, you know, put them all together in one place, what's going to happen? It's fire. I mean, it'll ignite. So that's what we're doing. We're coming together. And then we're going to disperse. So then this question, how do I not let, you know, the intensity go away? So it has to do with what you gain when you're together, hearing and chanting. Let it go in the heart, grananti. Let it enter into the heart and then continue in that process. That's another thing that Bhaktisiddhanta answered. What about when you're not near where there's Harikatha, what do you do? Well, we have all kinds of things, confluence of media or you know, technology. We can hear remotely. There's probably some number of people that are online watching right now from some other place. And even as, you know, sometime later, then you can hear, and then you can hear again, and hear again, and then you just, you know, there's ways when there's a desire. So a little light has to go on. We can take association, but then that association which we receive that makes the light brighter, that makes the little spark aflame, we have to continue fanning the spark and the flame, giving it oxygen, continue the process of hearing and chanting as is suitable for our lifestyle. You know, we have different requirements because of our lifestyle. Make that a priority and it'll happen. Krishna moves circumstances when there's a desire. We all have that experience. And then when that desire fades, some other circumstances come and it gets complex. And then we just don't have time for the hearing and chanting because it got complex. It had the step before that was our attention went somewhere else. We became complacent. So it's the desire. And find the means. If the desire is there, we'll find the means for that sound vibration to continue. And act upon it. Small thing. Application. So, come to the first class intelligent. Yes, Rivera.
Hello? There it is. Excuse me.
Hare Krishna. Hare
Krishna. Will I have permission just to make a comment
please.
On this, the words, because you focused on these words. Ardent. And I have my little device here.
Not only you have your device, you have your years and years and years of word crafting.
But I'm a word man.
You yeah, know, he's an editor, so he knows about words.
So first of all, the word ardent comes, you know, it has within it warmth. The root of it is ardor, which is the noun. And you go back to the French and the Latin and everything, and it's, the fire is there. That's something. So there's this fire of devotional service. And the same thing is there with tivra, which is often used for the rays of the sun, intensity of heat. And so I was thinking of that while I was thinking that how to maintain the ardent hearing. In other words, I've got it, but then I lose it. Right? This is a problem. How to sustain that. And it just reminded me of how, yeah, we're trying to light the fire, get fired up in devotional service, but we're pouring water on it. In other words, the water is when we're not strict about giving up the sense gratification and diverting our mind, then that weakens the ardor for not only hearing, but every aspect of devotional service. Is that an interesting...
What's the noun, ardor?
Ardor. Ardor. Yeah, ardor.
And literally that means fire.
No, it means
passion.
Intense desire. Ardent is the adjective, you know, ardent hearing, but ardor is the quality of being ardent, of being very attracted and with feeling doing anything, with a great deal of feeling.
Wholehearted.
A fervent, intense, zealous. These are like synonyms. You know, this okay. Ardent.
We hit his word crafting button. Good. Sabal.
In Spanish, Guru Maharaj, when you say something is on fire, you say ardiendo, which is, you know, comes with the Latin word, what he's saying, so it's interesting there.
And what's the Latin word?
I don't know the Latin word, but Spanish, you know, Spanish,
okay,
French,
Spanish.
All derived from directly
okay.
from Latin.
Okay.
So
okay.
Ardiendo means, you know, to be in fire.
Go ahead, Jai Jagannath.
Sometimes we experience that our hearts are so much overwhelmed by the practical affairs of material existence, or perhaps the distracting affairs of material existence, that our own quest for the truth becomes more or less marginalized or sidelined in our heart, because the practical affairs are more pressing to us and seem more detrimental to our being than the spiritual affair, which we know is anyway a long one that's long in the making and so on. So when my question yesterday, and I talked to a few devotees because of my question, it came up in the Prashadam Hall and so on. And it seemed to me that we can be ardent about something when it's really our own quest for the truth, when we've really taken it up for ourselves, versus it's just good for us because we've heard it's good for us. But when it's really something that we've taken up for ourselves, it's our own personal quest for truth. But in the practical affairs of existence, my heart's so overwhelmed by these affairs that it kind of takes away from my inquisitiveness for the actual truth in a very substantial way. It's just like we come to the programs because we know it's good for us. We've heard it's good for us. We have a little bit of conventional faith that it is. But our own quest for it is actually not at all really present, or at least it's marginalized in our heart. So I'm kind of wondering, how do we go from being overwhelmed in our hearts by these affairs to something that is actually our own personal quest for the absolute truth?
Like five things. I'll repeat something that I said yesterday, because I believe it, and I studied it like meticulously at the end of Brahma Samhita, after Brahma has realized, you know, his constitutional position, his personal relationship with Govinda as an eternal maidservant, and progressively the details of that, and all these wonderful prayers, he's still got something going on. Of course, Krishna gave him that something, this invested him with Srishti Shakti. But he's got this, I gotta build a universe. So the message is, once again, as yesterday, it does not interfere. It need not interfere. Say it better. It need not interfere. So, I'll say it another way. It is a misconception, Jai Jagannath Prabhu, that practical affairs, by their very nature, are going to obfuscate or obscure or diminish quest for truth. The fire will be pouring water on it by doing the practical affairs. And therefore the solution is diminish practical affairs and increase the other ones. And that's the solution. That's not our teaching. It's not Sri Brahma Samhita's teaching. It's not what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or Rupa Goswami teaches Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. Now, the other part of what I said was, we have individual natures. We're not Lord Brahma. And, you know, I'm not you, and you're not, you know, we're individuals. And therefore, as an individual, the solution, it's not just balance, it's like this question Nityapriya asked, and I picked up on it and spoke about it for the whole Sunday program, was what's our needs and what's our wants? And we have to have some internal introspection of, in order to be peaceful, you know, what you need to be peaceful and what he and she and that one need to be peaceful is unique. And so being introspective, what is it that's like I need? So on the spiritual point, all I need is service to Krishna. I don't need these worldly affairs. Transcendentally, that's a fact. We don't need a body. But we got one. Because we had desires. And so now how to manage that situation, and it's not, even for the same person, it's not the same throughout the course of one's life. It may not even be the same in the course of one day. But, you know, we want to be regulative to create a proper situation where those things, at least I feel I need, it has a place. I mean, there are people in this room and not in this room that have you know, unresolved emotional issues, and for them, they can't just like, you know, tuck it under the rug and just move on. They just do more devotionals, more hearing and chanting, and it's gonna, it keeps, you know, doesn't stay under the rug. So then that's a need, they have to address it. Although it's only temporary. It's the same thing that, that Prahlad Maharaj says that this human form of life is rarely achieved, and although it's only temporary, can be utilized. It's material. So, utilization, the key principle is, in those verses, the last five verses of Brahma Samhita, is in service to Krishna, subordinating, you know, a desire, an attraction for worldly things, submit that to do that for Krishna only. And we're nirvriti practitioners. We want to minimize that and minimize that. And it will be minimized to the degree that the fire of devotion is lit. And to the degree that the fire of devotion is lit, like your question is specifically, how do we own that fire? Not like circumstance creates it, circumstance changes, the fire goes out. So how would I own that quest for truth? But by association and the, you know, following the process of Krishna consciousness, hearing and chanting carefully, avoiding offenses, following strictly, and the fire will grow. And then when we, to the degree that proportionate to that fire, the worldly things are not distractions. Look at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's example. As if, you know, just like mechanically he would perform those things. Or those of us, unlike yourself, that, let's say specifically myself, that have a management role. My goodness, it takes up a lot of my time and I could do more hearing and chanting. So, maybe I should just, like, not do that. I thought about that a lot. And certainly the time will come, but at least, you know, in service to, if the mood is right, it's service to the Vaishnavas, and what enables me to do it, continuing in that mood and not just, well, it's duty, or it's resentfully, or, you know, what to speak of all the grief that people throw at you because you didn't do it the way they would want you to do it, or something like that, etc. It's something like what Bhaktisiddhanta did. After that 9 years of 64 rounds every day, he demonstrated to the world, he was qualified, like the Goswamis were qualified, beyond Varna and Ashram. What did he do? He placed himself within Varna Ashram system by accepting sannyas and took on grief. But why did he do that? Or why did Prabhupada do what he did? Not because he was like a business-minded person or something. One of his godbrothers said he was good because he was good at business. That's how he spread Krishna consciousness. Yasoda Nandana, but, not Yasoda Nandana. Yasamati Nandana shared this with me. When he heard a particular godbrother, Prabhupada, say that, he blasted him. He said, you don't even read Chaitanya Charitamrita. Don't you know it's only by Krishna Shakti that one can spread Krishna consciousness? You're a nonsense. He let him have it. Walked out. So it's by Krishna Shakti, then it's not a distraction. And seamlessly, Prabhupada demonstrated, purposefully he demonstrated, he could seamlessly move from one to the other. Just as Krishna did, dealing with the demons or the rascal personalities, just, I could be just disgusted. Going from the intimacy of love with, of exchange with Mother Jasoda, and now he's bound by the rope. There's verses that are commentary that describes, he then, Krishna just started dragging the mortar around. He was enjoying playing because there were other boys with him. And they were laughing. And he said, you know, why don't you go steal some butter, bring some. So he was just like continuing with them like a small boy. And then he saw the twin Arjun trees and he went into this other. My devotee Narada made a promise. I have to uphold this promise. Seamlessly he moved from, you know, what looked like worldly. But it just gets connected to his devotee. So same for us. The connection to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his mission and our founder Acharya, and our, we love them and we want to be instruments for them. That's all. Then it's not this distraction. It's Hari Seva that comes from Hari Katha, that comes from Krishna Nam. There's a seamless connection. If we're strong, if the fire, so I'm saying that's what happens when the fire of devotion to Krishna is strong. Your question specifically was, how does that fire become our own and not obligatory duties? So that comes from the right kind of association. Taking that right kind of association, taking it internally. And there are different ways by which we can take it. There's a whole variety of ways where transcendental knowledge can be imparted. Dibhyagyan enters, it awakens. In the case of the sages of Naimisharanya, it's hearing from Sutta. In the case of Maharaj Pariksit, it's hearing from Shukadeva, just from hearing from Shukadeva Goswami. And well, that was them, you know, there's this argument that says that was them. Prabhupada addresses this. Oh, I'm unfortunate because I'll never get to hear Krishna speak Bhagavad Gita like Arjuna did. And so I guess I have to hang out in the material world some more. No! Because one who hears one speaking those words, Krishna is speaking. You've heard me go off on this one because Prabhupada spoke on it. It's not distraction of worldly duties. This is a theme that you speak about. It's like it bothers you because it bothers you. It comes up. You want to have it addressed. Tivra bhakti transforms that into that which is, according to Brahma Samhita purport, as purifying as direct hearing and chanting. As purifying as. Not distraction. As purifying as. So we have different natures and different callings and different, you know, forces that are impelling us. Inspirations from Krishna that are impelling us in different ways. And those that lead to, say, practical affairs that it's not mundane junk. It's transcendental devotional service, as purifying as. So how do you get it? By proper association, properly receiving that descending gift. And from our side, striving to be very clear what that gift is and opening our hands and opening our hearts and receiving it, taking it inside and living with it. Growing it, cultivating it by the ongoing hearing and chanting process. Go ahead, you want to say something more?
I wanted to clarify that I wasn't trying to emphasize or point out that this is mundane work, it's necessarily distracting, and therefore stupid, give it up.
Okay, thanks for that clarification, because it sounded like it to me.
Yeah, that's not what I was saying.
Okay.
What I was saying is that as I personally talk to devotees who are my friends and who are involved with outside world more than I am myself, then they often do express that they lose momentum in terms of their inner aspiration for Krishna consciousness, where it becomes like kind of, you know, in the realm of their spiritual life, it becomes kind of like this routine work, you know, I gotta chant my rounds, etc. And so my question, and I think you've answered it.
Okay.
And I would just maybe ask a follow-up question to that. The question is, what can we do as a family of devotees for each other, especially those of us living nearby, to see to it that the inner momentum remains for transcendence, so that we don't feel ourselves collectively or individually overwhelmed by
the practical affair of existence? Thank you for that clarification. Helps a lot. Thank you very much for that clarification. Now I understand better where the question was coming from. So, this reminds me of something that you shared with me over a year ago, where you were sharing with me, how can we, those who live in the temple, be more integrated and be an inspiration for or an asset for our congregation that don't live in the temple? And that wasn't exactly the words you used, but that's like, you know, something in that direction. And it's one of the services that those who are renounced and don't have those same sets of worldly distractions of going to the office and, you know, kids crying and all this stuff. We don't have that. We have, by our own choice, a lifestyle that suits us, and we can then be of service to them, just as you described. You're that spark fanner. That by your example, and you know my example and Dravida's example, and the temple resident devotees are not like, oh, I can't relate to Jai Jagannath because he has a different lifestyle than I do. Rather, he's a spark fanner. Let me go get his association so I can stay in that fire can stay lit. So when we do things where we're giving that sound vibration, as Bhaktisiddhanta was describing in the readings, you know, he understand clearly what the purpose was. And then it's up to people to receive it according to their, you know whether receives are on or off. And besides whining and complaining, you know, take the message and take it to heart and stay in the fire by that association. By the fire that those who are brahmacharis and sannyasis and whose lives are simplified in terms of those, you know, the amount of worldly dealings that we have, we can be a resource for them as in a service to Lord Chaitanya's mission. Again, one of the things that I read from Bhaktisiddhanta yesterday, he was asked a question towards the end of his life, what's going to happen? What will we do when you're gone? He said, go to the mandir and hear the Harikatha. That was his answer. So we're the mandir folks. And we're here to serve all of the non-mandir folks. We keep our fire lit and serve the other persons and not just the congregation, you know, the out there people. And just, you know, do Harinam. And distribute books and hold functions and Harikatha, you know, just give Krishna abundantly. And then also selectively to those who say, I want some more. And then that's part of our seva. So that's an answer. Thank you very much for that clarification. It helped a lot. Anything over here? Yes, Krishnarjuna. This is going to be a last question. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
Sharampa Swami, from what you spoke, having the proper spiritual conception, it seems I'm going to make a connection with that doing kind of. You know, I'm doing mentality that you brought up near the end.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when one is confronted with a task, a devotional task, then it's clear that at least I observe at certain times one has the sense that one is doing.
Oh, yeah.
And
standard.
And I'm also connecting it with the other point that you brought up of, you know, the respect factor. I mean, in my own mind, whenever that emerges, I always see it as very disrespectful. It leads to the deities, yourself. And so I guess what I'm wanting to ask, when that emerges, that kind of sense of, you know, I'm doing, is it that the further hearing it will be strengthening that spiritual conception, yeah, so that that's not emerging? Or is it that one also needs to do some internal dialoguing to, you know, push it aside?
Well, it's both of those and more, but it starts with hearing, and from the hearing, you know, the light's on. Then the light says, I have to monitor this. You know, it's practice, it's knowledge defeating ignorance. So if the light's not on, ignorance is going to prevail. Darkness is going to be there. So that the inner, as you described it, the inner processing of things, that's needed. But it's not one versus the other, it's one following the other, and then other things in addition. Like, you know, hearing carefully, regularly, attentively, striving to understand. Prabhupada would use those terms. Try to understand. And as we're trying to understand, it's not an intellectual matter, it's receive the descending knowledge carefully, properly, and then you use it. So keep the other false ego bhav away and do the other one. So invest in one and withdraw from the other one. That's a consciousness factor that's being governed by proper knowledge. Withdraw from asat and place in sat. So there's an inner processor that has to be going on, but it starts with hearing. And if I, you know, attachments are such that we do that some of the time, and then in certain areas we don't do it at all because of attachments. And then we don't progress. We just stay stuck, like your wheel spinning in the mud. Press the accelerator pedal and the mud just flies. You got to get out of the mud. You need some help. So then we need association and things like that. Someone to help us. So it's additional things, but it all starts with hearing. Stay with that, and it gives strength to the other things. That has to be in place, always. Even when we're, you know, kind of stuck. It has to be there. And, you know, as the other discussions are, there's a tendency when we're stuck or complacent or whatever, that the hearing slackens, and then we're not even trying to go somewhere. We're just like being so-called enjoyers of worldly circumstances. Till it gets too painful again, then we, you know, sit straight again. Oh, I better watch it. And then repeat over and over again. So it's hearing carefully, regularly. Nitya and Swacheshtita. Okay. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.